Glenn Beck. The Blaze Radio Network.
Many, if not all, progressive politicians want to infringe on your constitutional right that specifically declares shall not be infringed. Often these progressives are opposed to the Second Amendment, and they don't even seem to really know why.
What's a barrel shroud, and why should we regulate
it? I actually don't know what a barrel shroud is.
Because it's in your
legislation. It's a shoulder thing that goes up.
No.
This right here has ability with a 30 caliber clip to disperse with 30 bullets within half a second. 30 magazine clip in half a second.
For most purposes, having these magazine clips that have more than 15 rounds in them, there's really no purpose for those except for shooting targets or shooting people.
Pistols are different. You have to pull the trigger each time. An assault weapon, you basically hold it, goes...
You can certainly use this for hunting, but some of these bullets, as you saw, have an incendiary device on the tip of it, which is a heat-seeking device. So you don't shoot deer with a bullet that size. If you do, you could cook it at the same time.
The Second Amendment is not about hunting. Currently, heat-seeking bullets don't exist, although DARPA is developing them. And hunting is a nice byproduct of gun ownership for many, but it is not what the American Founding Fathers had in mind when they wrote the Constitution.
We have federal regulations and state laws that prohibit hunting ducks with more than 3 rounds, and yet it's legal to hunt humans.
Another surprise to Dianne Feinstein and others. It actually isn't legal to hunt humans in any state in the Union, including North and South Dakota.
Ammunition, they're bullets. So the people who have those now, they're going to shoot them. And so if you ban them in the future, the number of these high-capacity magazines is going to decrease dramatically over time because the bullets will have been shot and there won't be any more available.
It's hard to believe the ignorance surrounding this issue. Hunting, weapons Americans could or could not use to bring down a deer, size of magazines. None of these are the point of the Second Amendment to the Constitution. So what is it that our founders intended? Well, let's start with the actual language. What does the Second Amendment actually say?
A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed.
All right, that sounds pretty clear. Guns are necessary to the security of a free state, and the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Not one word about hunting deer, elk, or anything else. The American founders had studied thousands of years' worth of the best knowledge mankind had to offer, and they used that knowledge to craft the Constitution.
The framers of the Bill of Rights believed in God. They fought for the freedom from religious persecution. They believed the right to self-defense is a fundamental God-given right that existed long before the creation of any government. In fact, written documents pertaining to self-preservation predate the Second Amendment by thousands of years. Reference to the right to freedom from violent harm and the right to self-defense is found in the Torah and Christian Bible in Exodus 22, verse 2. In Jewish law, the Talmud states, if someone comes to kill you, arise quickly and kill him. Roman Catholic doctrine has long asserted,
someone who defends his life is not guilty of murder, even if he is forced to deal his aggressor a lethal blow.
Protestant theologian Samuel Rutherford writes in his 1644 publication, Lex Rex,
because no king or civil power can take away nature's birthright of self-defense from any man or a community of men.
Even the Declaration of Independence, written 15 years before the Second Amendment was ratified, clearly states,
all human beings are endowed with certain unalienable rights, and that governments are created to protect those rights.
Historian and educator David Barton further discusses the founders' intent.
In the case of the Second Amendment, the Founding Fathers didn't call it the right to keep and bear arms the way it's written. They called it the biblical right of self-defense. So the ultimate goal of the Second Amendment is to make sure you can defend yourself against any kind of illegal force that comes against you, whether that's from a neighbor, whether that's from an outsider, or whether that's from your own government. And in the case of the American Revolution, if the Founding Fathers had not been able to take on that illegal British government coming in, so for them, it's not a matter of, oh, you got too many bullets in your magazine. It's no, whatever the government's got, we got to have the same thing, because if they've got an AK-47 and come through and we've only got a BB gun on the inside, this is not a deterrent. So the whole purpose of the Second Amendment is to make sure that you have equal power with whatever comes against you illegally. So at that point, that's got to control the gun control debate.
Two of the three founders who wrote the Federalist Papers to explain the Constitution and its intent to the people spoke about the right to bear arms.
Alexander Hamilton, in the Federalist Papers number 28, expressed,
"When a government betrays the people by amassing too much power and becoming tyrannical, the people have no choice but to exercise their original right of self-defense, to fight the government."
The thought process of so many today seems to be that the government has weaponry that's just too great, and so it's futile for people to be armed. But the fact is, with so many armed citizens in the country, there are up to 300 million firearms in the hands of the people. It would be incredibly difficult for the government or any invading force to suppress this people. In fact, in every single plan by the former Soviet Union to invade the United States of America, not one included crossing the border into Texas. Why? Because they knew Texans were well armed. Another point often made by progressives is the well-regulated militia in the Second Amendment. That's the National Guard, right? It isn't.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state.
The Second Amendment refers to a well-regulated militia. The right of the people to form citizen militias was unquestioned by the founders. In the Federalist Papers number 46, James Madison, the father of the Bill of Rights, argues,
"The ultimate authority resides in the people, and that if the federal government got too powerful and overstepped its authority, then the people would develop plans of resistance and resort to arms."
Some interpret today's National Guard as the well-regulated militia. But the founders opposed anything but a small national military.
There are some people that think that that phrase in the Second Amendment has an entirely different meaning.
The phrase well-regulated refers to a well-trained, prepared, and disciplined citizens' militia.
They seem to think that it means just the state National Guard. And they don't know their history. That's just not true.
The phrase was in common use in 1791 and for more than a century afterwards. The Oxford English Dictionary from that time period defines well-regulated as something that was calibrated correctly, functioning as expected.
That also explains another very common argument by the anti-Second Amendment crowd. They claim the phrase well-regulated gives the government the right to attach all kinds of regulations on gun ownership. That just isn't what was meant by the founders. As explained, at the time, it was meant as well-trained and prepared. Americans today don't like to hear that the Second Amendment was written for personal protection. But more than anything else, it was put there for American citizens' protection against a tyrannical government. No one ever wants to believe that it would ever become necessary for Americans to take up arms against its own government. And hopefully, we never ever will. But because of their own experiences with tyranny, they provided the means by which the people could, as a very last resort, do what they had done. Americans continually hear about nations who have confiscated guns and have very severe gun laws. In particular, Great Britain and Australia are often mentioned. So how is that worked out for them? We throw one on the Barbie in the next episode.
Glenn Beck.
Hey, again, I just want to thank the people at Goldline for making this serial possible. People around the world are losing trust in governments. Is your family prepared for the next crisis? The world markets are reflecting our despair, and I don't know what tomorrow will bring. Make sure your family is protected. Turn to the recognized safe haven asset that has been a valued storehouse of wealth for centuries. It's gold. Call Goldline, the only company that I trust and recommend it. You know and I know that the world is on fire. People don't trust their government. The world markets are reflecting all of this. Deutsche Bank is down 20% in the last 10 days alone. I don't know what it's done lately. But I want you to call Goldline, the only company that I trust and recommend. These are really good people. 877-370-COIN. 877-370-COIN. Goldline also offers their groundbreaking price protection against short-term market fluctuations on qualifying purchases. So call 877-370-COIN. 55-year history of helping people just like you, just like me. Read their important risk information and find out if gold or silver is right for you. Goldline. 1-877-370-COIN or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. The Blaze Radio Network.
I've also asked the school board to make a part of every day some kind of anti-violence, anti-gun message. We need to do this every day of the week and just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
After every mass shooting in America, progressive leaders seem to say the same things over and over again.
We know that other countries, in response to one mass shooting, have been able to craft laws that almost eliminate mass shootings. Friends of ours, allies of ours, Great Britain, Australia, countries like ours. So we know there are ways to prevent it.
The Australian government, as part of trying to clamp down on the availability of automatic weapons, offered a good price for buying hundreds of thousands of guns. They believed, and I think the evidence supports them, that by offering to buy back those guns, they were able to, you know, curtail the supply and to set a different standard for gun purchases in the future.
First of all, the Australian government didn't offer anything. It was a mandatory program. In other words, if you didn't turn your guns in, you went to jail. Yes, they paid the owners, but what is a good price for one's freedom? Australian gun owners had no choice but to sell their guns back that they had rightfully purchased. The law took nearly 661,000 guns out of the hands of law-abiding Aussies. Hillary further explained her thoughts on the Australian gun buyback.
Communities have done that in our country. Several communities have done gun buyback programs, but I think it would be worth considering doing it on the national level if that could be arranged.
There were tiny differences between the local buybacks in the United States and what Australia did. Mainly, those done here in America were voluntary. Australians, again, had no choice.
I can't say it any other way than that. I felt sick. I had to hand them in, because if I didn't, I was going to jail.
There's no ifs or buts about that. By taking that gun away from me, they've stolen something from me.
Since the United States has something called, the Constitution, voluntarily giving up one's guns is the only way it can constitutionally happen here. Unless, again, the anti-gun advocates violate or change the Constitution. And each time Obama and others have called for these kinds of measures here, they have been accused by defenders of the Second Amendment of wanting to confiscate America's guns.
Contrary to the claims of what some gun rights proponents have suggested, this hasn't been the first step in some slippery slope to mass confiscation. Contrary to claims of some presidential candidates apparently before this meeting, this is not a plot to take away everybody's guns.
Then maybe, just maybe, it might be prudent to stop talking about two countries friendly to us that solved their gun issues by confiscating citizens' guns and imposing gun bans. It's also important to look at just how solved the gun problems in the UK and Australia are. A reminder of Barack Obama's claims.
We know that other countries, in response to one mass shooting, have been able to craft laws that almost eliminate mass shootings. Friends of ours, allies of ours, Great Britain, Australia, countries like ours. So we know there are ways to prevent it.
So have they crafted laws that have almost eliminated mass shootings? John Lott, economist, author, professor, and fellow at various universities, including the University of Chicago, Yale, Stanford, Rice, and Wharton, and Second Amendment advocate on how effective confiscations and gun bans are in places like Australia and Europe.
If you listen to Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton, they want to go and argue that the United States is unique in terms of mass public shootings, and that's simply not the case. Now, it's true that the media in the United States doesn't cover these mass public shootings in other countries, but if you take the FBI definition of a mass public shooting, which is has traditionally been four or more people killed in a public place, not involving something like a gang fight that's going on, you in fact find that during the first 7 years of President Obama's administration, there were 25 mass public shootings in the United States, and there were 25 mass public shootings in the European Union. If you look at the rate that people were killed per million people, it was virtually the same in both the European Union and in the United States. And in fact, the rate of injury for mass public shootings in the European Union was almost twice what it was, actually more than twice what it was in the United States.
But what about the off-mentioned Australia? The NRA reported on a University of Melbourne study that took place 12 years after the ban was imposed, a British Journal of Criminology study, and spoke with Australians affected by the confiscation.
A right stolen by their government, promising safety in return for its gun bans. But now citizens know the frightening truth. The cost of lost liberty can be measured in the loss of life.
It's become very, very obvious, even to Blind Freddy, that the expenditure of $500 million has done absolutely nothing to reduce crime. And it certainly didn't do what the government touted it would do, which was to reduce crime. It hasn't done that at all. In fact, there's been more.
This has been a lot of bull and hasn't really done much to help society and with its problems.
Cold, hard facts. The anti-gun forces can no longer escape. Armed robberies have skyrocketed, up 69%. Assaults involving guns rose 28%. Gun murders increased 19%. And a new phenomenon, home invasions jumped 21%. An increase politicians insist they can't explain because they're still trying to legally define what a home invasion is and what the penalty should be.
John Lott shared even more staggering statistics that the American media just doesn't seem interested in.
If you look at all the casualties, these are killings and woundings from mass public shootings in the United States during the first 7 years of President Obama's administration, what you find is that there were 396 casualties. In the war on guns, I list down every case. In France, in 2015 alone, they had 532 casualties from mass public shootings. So France, a country whose population is one-fifth the size of the United States, had significantly more casualties from mass public shootings in 1 year than the United States had over 7 years.
And when terror shootings are included?
From 1970 until now, there's only been one of the 25 worst mass public shootings in the world that occurred in the United States, and that was the recent Orlando shooting. All the other ones, all 24 other ones, occurred in other countries. And one of the interesting things is that 23 of the worst 25 mass public shootings have been done by Muslims.
In an atmosphere where the low gun crime rates of all of these gun ban countries are used as a battering ram every time there's a tragedy in our country, it's illuminating to hear the actual facts about them.
A lot of people will say, we'll just pick one or two countries and we'll say, look, the UK has strict gun control laws and they have a low homicide rate, have low gun ownership rates compared to the United States. So it must be strict gun ownership. Well, the response, I think, the proper response to that is to point out that before they had, let's say, the handgun ban in 1997, the UK had even lower homicide rates relative to the United States. It's true, it's still lower than the United States, but that's despite the gun control laws rather than because of the one. The gun control laws have consistently raised the homicide rates in countries that have banned guns. One of the chapters I have in the War on Guns shows that every country in the world that's banned either all guns or all handguns has seen an increase in murder rates and homicide rates after the ban. You'd think just out of randomness, you'd find one country where the homicide rates went down after the ban. But in fact, the opposite's true, and it's dramatically true that when countries ban guns, you'll see, you know, 6, 7, 8-fold increases sometimes in homicide rate.
And the reason, according to Lott, is just what so many gun owners have repeatedly claimed.
When you ban guns, or this is true for lots of gun regulations, it's the most law-abiding good citizens who obey the regulations, not the criminals. And to the extent that you disarm law-abiding citizens relative to criminals, you actually make it easier for those criminals who still have guns to commit crime, and you see increases in murder rates and other violent crimes.
The problem America has is that the emotion seems to rule the day, especially after a tragedy. But we are a nation getting more and more emotional on all sides. We take a look at how progressives use that emotion to overcome the Second Amendment on the next episode.
Glenn Beck, The Blaze Radio Network.
What's a barrel shroud and why should we regulate?
I actually don't know what a barrel shroud is.
Okay, because it's in your
legislation. It's a shoulder thing that goes up.
No.
This right here has ability with a 30 caliber clip to disperse with 30 bullets within half a second. 30 magazine clip in half a second.
For most purposes, having these magazine clips that have more than 15 rounds in them, there's really no purpose for those except for shooting targets or shooting people.
Pistols are different. You have to pull the trigger each time. An assault weapon, you basically hold it, goes.
You might think that politicians would at least learn enough about guns to know what they're talking about when they speak out vehemently against them. But they don't. In this series, we have focused on America's founding fathers' intent for gun ownership, which they made crystal clear in the Second Amendment. We've also delved into the gun bans around the world and discovered how absolutely ineffective they've been. Sadly, here in the United States, progressives use every single mass shooting as another opportunity to infringe on American citizens' right to bear arms. This has all been seen before, as it was seen in Australia and the UK. Former California state legislator Tim Donnelly explains the progressive agenda since the tragedy at Sandy Hook.
There's not a single law that was proposed across the entire United States that would have prevented that tragedy. In fact, that kid tried to buy the weapon at a gun store and wouldn't take the background check, and therefore he was denied the right to legally purchase a firearm.
Progressives know full well that what they propose wouldn't have stopped any of the mass shootings that have taken place. But their typical refrain is this.
We have got to do something about gun violence in America.
We have to do something, right? Not the right thing. Just something. We have to do something. Something that will make us all feel good, even if it results in Americans losing a God-given, enshrined right. But it's not just about doing something. Often, progressives flat out lie.
We know that states with the most gun laws tend to have the fewest gun deaths. So the notion that gun laws don't work or just will make it harder for law-abiding citizens and criminals will still get their guns, it's not borne out by the evidence.
Barack Obama knows that what he's saying is simply not true. But he was very careful to spin that statement to make it about states, when he knows full well that cities like Chicago and Washington, D.C. have the toughest gun laws in the nation. They also have two of the highest rates of gun murders in the nation for large cities, whereas Illinois has a gun murder rate of 2.8 per 100,000. But Chicago is right at 16, five times the rate of Illinois. Maryland's is 5.1. Virginia's is 3.1. But Washington, D.C., 16.5. Overall, Louisiana's rate is fairly high, 7.7, but considering the progressive run and controlled New Orleans rate is 19, that just might have something to do with the overall rate for Louisiana as a whole. Another progressive, Senator Dianne Feinstein, was caught in another lie in an interview about her gun control legislation on PBS.
What do you say to people who support the right to own arms? That this is the camel's nose under the tent, and the next thing you'll be after concealed carry weapons. You'll be after other kinds of gun rights.
Well, that's just not true. It wasn't true with the prior bill that was the law for 10 years. And I just think, candidly, that dog doesn't hunt.
Why shouldn't it be true? Why wouldn't you want to go after those other laws?
Because that's not what I've done in the past, and it's not what I'm doing right now.
It's not what she's done in the past, and it's not what she's doing right now? Here's what she said in the past.
If I could have gotten 51 votes in the Senate of the United States for an outright ban, picking up every one of them, Mr. and Mrs. America, turn them all in, I would have done it. I could not do that. The votes weren't here.
Even though progressives have been unsuccessful so far at overturning the Second Amendment, they have made inroads, like gun-free zones, where guns are supposedly not allowed. Recently, a local news anchor spoke with a district court judge who, as a U.S. attorney, helped create gun-free zones.
It has saved countless lives in the past 20 years.
I think Mr. Stockman's intents are good. He can amend the law and allow certain individuals to carry guns on school zones. That is a much easier proposal than eliminating the law.
Have gun-free zones saved countless lives? Because to many, it would seem that most, if not all, of these mass shooting events have taken place at so-called gun-free zones. Schools, the post office, malls. A fact-check news segment with Ben Swan called Reality Check actually looked into the facts. And claims by left-wing publication Media Matters.
The debate over gun-free zones is a heated one. Conservative media, after a shooting like the one at the Umpqua Community College in Oregon, immediately begin to say that we need to consider gun-free zones as part of the problem. Media on the left fires back that those claims are simply untrue. Take, for instance, an article published by Media Matters for America. It states this, quote, despite claims about gun-free zones, the overwhelming majority of mass shootings actually occur where guns are allowed to be carried. So where are the numbers to back that statement up? Well, it actually comes from a report from a group called Every Town for Gun Safety. That report was published last year. It states that only 14% of mass public shootings take place in gun-free zones. Only 14%. Every town claims that 86% of such incidents occurred in places where guns are allowed. The only problem with that analysis is that, according to the Crime Prevention Research Center, the Every Town analysis is wrong.
Interesting. Is it possible that an anti-gun crusader, Michael Bloomberg's Every Town group, had an agenda and may have been somewhat dishonest in gathering its figures? Yes. It does appear possible.
See, Every Town's recent analysis of mass shootings is riddled with errors. Mistakes are made on a number of mass shootings, as well as the extent of mental illness, the killer's ages, and even where the attacks occurred. So what are the correct numbers? Well, in order to get them, Crime Prevention Research Center looked at mass public shootings since the beginning of 2009. They focused on attacks that have particularly terrified Americans, the mass shootings that take place in public places. These are shootings about which they say the point of such crimes is to kill as many people as possible and create as much carnage as possible in order to obtain media attention. Also, they focused exclusively on shootings, excluding such attacks as the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing. They also exclude gang violence and turf wars, again focusing only on mass shootings designed to create terror. In those cases, what did they find? Well, from January of 2009 through the middle of July of 2014, there were 25 mass public shootings where at least four people were killed with a gun. Of those shootings, 8% of mass public shootings have occurred in places where civilians are allowed to defend themselves. But the other 92% happened in a so-called gun-free zone.
If you don't believe the numbers, maybe the shooters themselves will convince you.
Aside from those statistics, consider what some of these mass shooters themselves have said. Elliot Roger, who shot to death three people in Santa Barbara, explained why he picked his target. In his 141-page manifesto, he said that he chose to skip at least one location for the shooting because he worried that someone with a gun, specifically armed police, might stop him before he could kill enough people. Or James Holmes, the killer at the Colorado movie theater. He lived within a 20-minute drive of seven movie theaters that were showing the premiere of the Batman movie. But he chose the one single theater that banned guns. And possibly the most shocking example to people, the Fort Hood shooting in 2009, where 13 people were killed, 30 others were wounded. Or the Washington, D.C. Naval Yard shooting, where 12 people were killed and 8 wounded. Or even the Navy Recruiting Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee, earlier this year, where 4 Marines were killed. All three military installations that are gun-free zones, with the exception of military police, who are allowed to be armed.
What we do know is progressives will continue to make an illogical and emotional case.
It is so important when we lose 90 people a day, 33,000 Americans every year, and when you have met as many victims of gun violence as I have, when you've sat there and you've listened to their stories about losing a child, losing a husband, losing a parent. And I've met with the mothers who have lost children to gun violence by police hands, by, you know, more likely gun and gang deadly combination. I've just met so many people from Columbine to Sandy Hook. I just can't remain silent. And I think we are at a turning point. And what I said to the man here is, you know, there needs to be a rival organization to the NRA of responsible gun owners who know that their hunting rights
are shooting rights.
They're collecting rights. Right. All of that is not going to be affected. So I'm going to keep beating the drum.
But the problem will never be solved until they stop blaming the guns and start concentrating on the people pulling the triggers. How have they gotten to that stage? What contributed to it? Broken families? Drugs? Mental illness? In the final segment of this series, we'll focus on where we are today. How can we protect this constitutional right to defend ourselves while protecting our families and our nation?
Glenn Beck,
The Blaze Radio Network.
The notion that I or Hillary or Democrats or whoever you want to choose are hell-bent on taking away folks' guns is just not true. And I don't care how many times the NRA says it. I'm about to leave office. There have been more guns sold since I've been president than just about any time in U.S. history. There are enough guns for every man, woman, and child in this country. And at no point have I ever proposed confiscating guns from responsible gun owners.
If Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have never advocated taking guns from responsible gun owners, then why do they both keep suggesting that we could use as a model for the United States the gun laws in Britain and Australia, two countries that have taken guns out of the hands of responsible gun owners? For American citizens who don't believe that confiscation can happen in the United States of America, here's a clue. It already has.
No one will be able to be armed. We will take all weapons.
That was the announcement by the police in New Orleans, Louisiana, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. One elderly woman who had plenty of food stored up, a gun for protection, and wanted to stay in her home rather than flee to a shelter, was backed into a corner of her kitchen by six police officers who'd shown up to remove her.
You're in shock. I'm saying, look at all my food. I got plenty of food. They kept pushing me back, and ended up like this.
Then, Patty showed them a small revolver she was carefully holding in the palm of her hand. A camera crew was there to capture what unfolded next.
I said, it's not even loaded. And I dropped it on the floor.
You got a gun.
Well, they punched me in the face.
Relax now.
Look at my black and blue marks. Look at what they did to me. They dragged me out of here. I really thought they were going to kill me.
She was far from the only one.
We had identification. We were coming back from a house that we were taking the weapons out of so criminals wouldn't break in and steal them. And we've had policemen tell us that that's what they wanted us to do. But not the sheriff in St. Tammany. They just wanted to confiscate it from us.
We felt like criminals at the time when they come up to us with M16s or AR-15s, whatever it was, but there were four of them with rifles and holding on us with our hands in the air until they got in our boat.
The officer's parting remark was chilling.
They took them. And they didn't have a right to take them. They didn't have a reason to take them. That was the thing. We did nothing wrong. But they took them anyway. He said, be thankful we're taking your guns here. Why should I be thankful? Well, if they catch you with them on land, they're going to take you straight to jail.
Residents of New Orleans, assuming that they were still living in the United States of America under the protection of the Constitution, could not believe what was happening.
These cops came out of nowhere, said stop, and asked, do we have weapons in the car? And I told him, yeah, I do. He said, get out the vehicle. Had us all sit cross-legged in front while they searched the vehicle. I had a .22 long rifle. My tenant's girlfriend had a .22 pearl-handled revolver given to her by her grandmother or grandfather.
But Robert couldn't believe what he watched police do next to his rifle and his friend's pearl-handled revolver.
I saw them smash her gun given to her by grandmother, grandfather, just against the curb. The other things that they busted up, the .22 rifle they busted up, these were police officers that went too far. We didn't have any rights. I mean, they treated us like criminals. They treated us like if we were in a third world country.
There are literally hundreds of stories like these from citizens living in an American city, assuming that the Second Amendment would prevent this kind of action from their government.
So they said, okay, we're seizing these weapons. So I said, I want a receipt for my guns. They said, no, we're not giving receipts. Said, if we give receipts, we'd be out here all day writing receipts for all the weapons we've confiscated. It made me angry when they told me to go get a lawyer if I wanted my guns back. That's when I really got angry.
So with the city in disarray, and in fact bordering on anarchy during the struggle to recover from the devastation of the hurricane, law-abiding citizens who stayed behind to take care of their property were left defenseless in a city that could be considered the murder and violent crime capital of the nation. There are those who would be ecstatic at the possibility of disarming all Americans permanently. For instance, Hollywood's Matt Damon. He's one of them. He's made these comments while promoting a movie in Australia.
You guys did it here in one fell swoop, and I wish that could happen in my country, but it's not. It's such a personal issue for people that we cannot talk about it sensibly.
It's difficult to have a sensible conversation when people don't understand fundamental God-given rights like the Second Amendment. And then when there's an elitist group of left-wing radicals who just don't understand how, why, or what the American Founding Fathers were thinking or trying to guard against when they adopted that portion of the U.S. Constitution. On the other hand, there are a select few who do understand. Kurt Russell is somebody who understands several truths.
The last thing I like to watch is entertainers or actors get political. It's just something I can't stand watching.
But a reporter with an anti-gun agenda pushed him into being what he despises, an actor talking politics.
Between Paris and San Bernardino, there's this thing that
sudden violence as a normal day-to-day aspect coming from the gun culture, coming from everything else. It's a different vibe, you know?
I don't understand the concepts of conversation of the gun culture. We've lived with guns since, what, the 7th century or something? Well, I don't know.
We all know that right now guns is a trope. It's a totem. It's a metaphor that disenfranchised white guys need. It makes them feel good because they're being...
You can say what you want. I don't agree with that. So it's not my thing.
But it's statistically...
If you think that, if you think gun control or something like that is going to change a terrorist point of view, I think you're like out of your mind. I think anybody is. I think it's absolutely insane. The problem we're having right now is that we don't have the concepts of how to turn it around and say, you know, you may think you've got me worried about what you're going to do. Dude, you're about to find out what I'm going to do. And that's going to worry you a lot more. And that's what we need.
It may also surprise some to hear rapper Ice-T take a British reporter to task.
Well, I give up my gun when everybody else does.
And is that
doesn't that make sense?
Well,
doesn't that make sense? I mean, if you were to, if there were guns here, would you want to be the only person without one?
So do you carry guns?
Not
routinely at home. I mean, you have a gun at home?
Yeah, it's legal in the United States. It's part of our Constitution. You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny. Not to hunt, to punt. It's to protect yourself from the police.
And do you see any link between that and these sorts of incidents?
No. Nah, not really. You know what I'm saying? If somebody wants to kill people, you know, they don't need a gun to do it.
Makes it easier, though, doesn't it?
Not really. You can use you can strap explosives on your body. They do that all the time.
So when there's the inevitable backlash of the anti-gun lobby as a result of this incident, as it always is...
Well, that's not going to change anything
in
the United States. The United States is based on guns.
The incredulous attitude of the British reporter was obvious, especially given that the perception of so many in England and around the world is that in the United States, people are being slaughtered by guns in numbers too great to even count. So let's go beyond the perception. What are the actual facts? In Britain, where possession of handguns is illegal, the rate of violent crime is 2,034 crimes per 100,000 people. That is more than 4 times the rate of the United States, where there are only 466 violent crimes per 100,000. As you might expect, the United States has the highest rate of gun ownership in the world at 88 guns per 100 citizens. Yemen is a distant second at 54.8. Yet Honduras has the highest intentional homicide rate in the world at 91.6 per 100,000. The United States is close. It's actually 103rd at 4.8. Another amazing statistic, of course never shared in the media, is that 200,000 times a year, a woman in America uses a gun to defend herself against sexual abuse. 200,000 times every year. But when it comes to attacking gun rights in the U.S., the facts be damned for the progressive left.
People who we know have been on ISIL websites, living here in the United States, U.S. citizens, and we're allowed to put them on the no-fly list when it comes to airlines, but because of the National Rifle Association, I cannot prohibit those people from buying a gun. This is somebody who is a known ISIL sympathizer.
First of all, if someone has visited an ISIL website, does that make them automatically an ISIL sympathizer? Could they be on the site for, let's say, research for a radio program, or by mistake, or because they're curious? And of course, it is easier to put someone on the no-fly list than it is to take away a constitutional right. If there was a 28th Amendment and it stated, rapid, timely travel being a necessity to a nation's economic growth, the right to be seated on a jet engine aircraft and to get from point A to point B shall not be infringed. Well, then it would be a lot harder to put somebody on the no-fly list. But like so many progressives, Barack Obama never seems to concern himself with the actual facts, especially when it comes to gun rights.
We flood communities with so many guns that it is easier for a teenager to buy a Glock than get his hands on a computer or even a book.
That was the statement so patently ridiculous that even the liberal fact-checking site PolitiFact went so far as to label it flawed. Flawed? Yeah, I mean, keep in mind it is PolitiFact that we're talking about, who also termed Obama's claim mostly false. Mostly false? Is that kind of like mostly dead? But this is where America is today in the battle to retain its Second Amendment rights. One slip up from a Second Amendment supporter brings widespread condemnation and ridicule from the media. But an anti-gun president of the United States can claim that your 14-year-old is more likely to have a fully automatic Glock G20 on their nightstand than a heartwarming copy of The Fault in Our Stars. The first step in protecting and defending the Constitution is knowing that there is an ongoing attack. And while progressives certainly have contempt for the Second Amendment, they also know that the vast majority of Americans cherish the Constitution, including, if not especially, the Second Amendment. So progressive politicians continue to walk the fine line between appearing to support the Constitution while at the same time desperately trying to curtail or eliminate American citizens' gun rights. The only way to stop them is with an informed, vigilant, and active citizenry.
Glenn Beck.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Want more serials? You can listen to every episode at glennbeck.com/serials. Next week, we'll revisit Hillary Clinton's scandalous past.
Hey, again, I just want to thank the people at Goldline for making this serial possible. People around the world are losing trust in governments. Is your family prepared for the next crisis? The world markets are reflecting our despair, and I don't know what tomorrow will bring. Make sure your family is protected. Turn to the recognized safe haven asset that has been a valued storehouse of wealth for centuries. It's gold. Call Goldline, the only company that I trust and recommend it. You know and I know that the world is on fire. People don't trust their government. The world markets are reflecting all of this. Deutsche Bank is down 20% in the last 10 days alone. I don't know what it's done lately. But I want you to call Goldline, the only company that I trust and recommend. These are really good people. 877-370-COIN. 877-370-COIN. Goldline also offers their groundbreaking price protection against short-term market fluctuations on qualifying purchases. So call 877-370-COIN. 55-year history of helping people just like you, just like me, read their important risk information and find out if gold or silver is right for you. Goldline, 1-877-370-COIN or goldline.com.